Hello and welcome to the Derailed Podcast. I'm Chris.
And I'm Fred.
Yeah. Fred, how are you doing?
Good, thanks. Good.
Yeah.
Got to play an 18XX in the last week, so.
We did, yeah. One of these days we're going to get a ride where we play three in 1 week. That's my dream.
Three in a week?
Yeah, when we do Saturday, Thursday, Saturday.
We can do it.
Yeah.
We can do it.
I was so close one time. And then one of them got cancelled. I was like, oh, damn man. It. I almost lived the dream.
Soon.
Yes. So we got some emails.
Mm.
Always start off the show with emails. So I got an email from our buddy we were playing R18XX with. He emails quite a lot.
Per,
but I found out it's Pear.
Pear.
My okay. Bad. Yeah.
Okay.
My Swedish is... I apologize to any other Swedes listening. Yeah. For messing up Pear's name. Yeah. So he was just talking about... apparently... outside discussion is frowned upon
during
on
play.
18XX games. Yeah, so I shouldn't be discussing my secret plans with you.
Okay, no, but that's fair enough. I think
it's fair, but I felt like I needed some kind of edge. I feel like that game is going terribly for me.
Really,
by the way.
I feel like it's going pretty well for me so far.
But... yeah, I think I may have peaked too soon.
So I just took my turn now, just before you got here for the recording.
Okay,
the two trains are gone.
The two trains are gone. I've got three of those and they only ran once.
You had
so
three
this
of
is
those.
Kind of interesting because what I'm enjoying about this play is that I feel like we're playing with two people who are definitely better than us at this.
Yes.
I already get that feeling, you know. We did the private auction and they were like, wow, that went so quickly. And we're like, yeah. Our private auctions always go quickly. We're just like, I'll buy this one.
Yes.
I'll bid an extra $5 on this one. Oh, too rich for me.
Yes.
So I knew things were serious when I bid an extra $5 on one of them and pair upped it to 200, which was like 40 more. And
yes.
I was like, okay.
I saw that as well.
We're playing in the big leagues now.
Yeah, we've never had that in one of our games.
No, I knew that there was stuff here that obviously I didn't understand. So that's been quite an interesting experience.
Yeah. No, it's been fun though. I really enjoy... being able to like take my time, look at the stock chart and the finances carefully, you know, all of those things. I think it will help in live plays as well, because I've already found some things that I'm now like considering with shares and stuff like that that
yeah.
I wasn't really when playing live.
So I definitely think it helps our understanding of the game a little bit, having all the data out there, because you can see the impact of one decision.
Yes. Yeah, and you can do some. You can take the time and do some math as well, and see if I do this now, how will that impact my income in the next hours coming up, and things like that. So no, I'm really enjoying it.
The only criticism I have is of all the data is that probably that net worth. You know, I think at the bottom that shows you your net worth.
Yes.
It's probably gonna make the end game a little bit less exciting.
Because yes,
you might see very early on like, oh, I'm actually getting crushed. I thought I was doing pretty well. But.
Yes.
Yeah,
but maybe that helps you call the game as well.
Yeah, I guess maybe it does.
I don't know if you can just resign or you just discuss it.
Just tap out. I suppose you can just discuss it amongst yourselves.
Yeah,
to be honest,
just discuss it and then call it, yeah.
Yeah, and then you just shut the game down and fire up a new one.
Yes.
Yeah, so Pear sent some other stuff as well, but I wanted to talk about some of it later because it sort of ties into a different topic.
Okay.
And then a couple of people have emailed saying they'd also like to play an online game with us.
Oh, so awesome.
That seems really cool. So yeah, we'll definitely try to set that up.
Yeah, I don't know how many I can handle at a time though. Even though they're slow, like I will lose track of what I was planning.
What's what, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
But I think what's kind of nice about them is because there's so much information, you kind of open it up and be like, okay, what's my situation? What am I doing here?
Yes.
You know, because oftentimes if you only take one or two turns a day, you can kind of lose track of what's happening in the game. But
yeah,
it's not too bad when you've got all the info because you're like, oh yeah, I'm doing this, so I'm doing
that. No, that helps for sure, yeah.
Yeah, but I think you have a rough strategy in mind anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, we got another email from Scott. I don't know where Scott is from, but he's got an English sounding name. So maybe the UK or the US.
Okay.
Yeah, but he sent us his top five 18XX.
Oh, interesting.
Which I thought was interesting. So Scott's top five, number five was 54, which we have not played.
Mm-hmm.
The other four we have played. So where do you think Scott ranked? Scott, your good friend Scott, who you know his tastes very well. Where do you think he ranked 89?
89 is a good game. I would say second.
Number four.
Oh,
pretty
wow.
Brutal.
Okay.
Yeah. And where do you think he ranked podcast favorite 1846?
Oh, well, are you just going in order? So it's higher than four. Wow.
I know.
Is it third?
It's number one.
What?
Scott, I'm sorry.
Wow.
So I got this email like, I feel like it was like the same day we recorded the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if Scott feels very heartbroken now that we basically took a big dump on his favorite game.
Yeah, so that's very interesting. Did he say why at all, or just...
No. Okay.
I'm still open to playing it, so...
Yeah, so 49 was second, mm-hmm. which you play as well, and 1830 was number three.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm also open to playing it. I just feel like I want to come back to it almost later.
Yes, yeah, no, me too. Like I said to you, after our play on Saturday, we had a play of 47. Yeah. And I said to you after that, like, I kind of feel like I just want to take one game and play it a couple of times in a row.
Right.
Because it feels like every time I play a new game, I learn something new or something's different, or all the stuff I thought about my previous play doesn't really apply because capitalization is different or something like that, you know. So I kind of want to just take a game and play it a couple of times in a row and get the hang of it properly. And then I think it might also be easier to, once you've got the hang of a particular game, to add or change some things to it, and then you just focus on the changes and, you know, and think about how that impacts strategy.
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting you mentioned that, because actually it's something I wanted to discuss, which was kind of like a, I guess you could call it a state of the podcast.
Okay.
Right? Because we've been pretty good at almost consistently talking about a new game almost every week.
Yes.
But I think we discussed this on Saturday, where you were saying that, you know, we keep playing new games, but we kind of need to figure out the nuts and bolts of how these things work. Mm. And I think it's what's interesting about 18XX is that, you know, I think that because we're doing a podcast, I was kind of like, yeah, we should do new games. We have new stuff to talk about, all that kind of stuff. But 18X, and I think that's kind of board game culture.
Yes.
Yeah. So I don't know if the people listening play other board games. I know a lot of people just play 18XX, but I'm sure a lot of people play heavy Euros and stuff like that as well. We come from a kind of hobby board game background, I suppose you could say.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that the board game culture is very much like, they call it cult of the new, right? Yes. Whatever the newest thing is. And it's not uncommon for people to back these games on Kickstarter, buy these board games, fill up their shelves with games and play them like literally like once or twice.
Mm.
And then they move on to the next one and they almost get forgotten, you know? And I think that it's not necessarily realistic with 18XX. And I think that we have to, in doing a weekly podcast, we may have to approach it a little bit differently as well.
Yes.
Because ultimately, if we want to keep doing this on a weekly basis, which we do, we can't play a new 18XX every week.
No, I don't think that's sustainable in the long run.
No.
So what were you thinking?
Well, I think what I was thinking on top of that was also, would we want to play new 18XX every week? You know, you were saying that you want to play like a full cap game five times, for example, so you can sort of iron out the strategies of full cap a little bit more and kind of understand it a little bit better.
Yes.
So I guess the way I think about it is that we'll certainly talk about our plays that we've had and things like that. But I thought maybe we could also, when we're not playing a new one, when we're revisiting something we've played before, we can talk about kind of, I want to say, what we figured out. What we've learned,
right?
How we're evolving, you know, more sort of strategy-based stuff.
Mm.
And so I think we can try and be very mindful of these games that we play and try and make the discussion meaningful.
Yes.
Not like, oh, Simon dumped that company, bro. That was so dope. But more like, more kind of in the vein of sort of trying to unpack the strategy or unpack something that we tried differently, right?
Yes.
Or, you know, we tried this and this is how it worked out, or this is what we've discovered about the game.
Mm.
You know, so to add some, inject a bit more strategy discussion into it.
Yes, I like that idea. Yeah, after every game I play, I try to think to myself, like, what were the mistakes I think I made and things like that. So we could potentially discuss that and, like you say, things we learned or things we discovered during that play. And if it gets to a point where we don't discover anything new, then maybe it's time to focus on another game.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Then play that a couple of times and see what we can learn from that one.
And we can also bounce between a couple, you know.
Yes.
I think it's just because I think our other players will get super bored of playing like 89 every single week, you know. But yeah, I think so. We'll see how we go. I mean, I think we don't necessarily know how it's going to go or what it's going to be. But I think the podcast has always been relatively informal, but we are going to continue to try and make it interesting.
Yes, no, and I'd like to keep it weekly. I enjoy doing it weekly. So
yeah, absolutely.
And maybe they'll become a little bit shorter. We've been kind of pushing an hour an episode. Maybe we'll go a little bit shorter. But yeah, we'll try and stick to it.
I think essentially we can't really put any kind of guidelines on what exactly it's going to be, because maybe we don't necessarily know. But I think that a lot of podcasts, especially board game podcasts, I find function almost as, I want to say, kind of like a buyer's guide, right? Like you're listening to the next episode of a podcast because it's about a new game, and now you want to know if you want to buy that game. I feel like the board game machine kind of runs that way. It's all about buying the next thing.
Yeah, the new hotness.
Yes. Yeah, it's all about buying the next thing and filling up your shelf with something new. And I guess that's part of the fun of it. Part of the fun of the board game hobby is like buying new stuff and being excited about new stuff. But ever since getting into 18XX, I've sort of stepped back from that a little bit. And I haven't bought a new board game in ages outside of 18XX games.
Yes.
And I must confess, I do have a little bit of that reignited desire with 18XX, because I think it's really cool to have a big collection of them. Like that kind of appeals to me. But yeah, there's a want and a desire to sort of explore the games we have and try and understand them more.
Yeah, because there is so much depth to each one of them. And when you just play it once or twice, you only touch the surface or only scratch the surface, I think. So yeah. No, I think that sounds like a good idea. We play them a few times and delve a bit more into strategy, general strategy. It doesn't have to be for a particular 18, like 89 or whatever, but it can maybe be strategy for full cap games or
exactly. I think that's the thing, right? They're quite generalizable, a lot of them. The specific nuances of each game are certainly different, but there's a lot of strategic stuff that you can learn that you can generalize to other games as well. So it's not like we're going to go super deep on, you know, some board game that just really you can't really extract to anything else. 18XX is a little bit different in that way.
Yeah,
but we'll see how we go. But I think we'll try and from each play sort of take a lesson away from it, or, you know, something we've learned to try and pass that on, or discuss that, or I don't know, just keep it interesting any way we can.
Yeah, really. For sure. No, sounds good.
Yeah, but I think I was just thinking about it and I was thinking, you know, realistically, this can't function as a buyer's guide because it's simply, look, I wouldn't necessarily base your purchase decisions on our opinions anyway, because we're playing them once a lot of the time. And but I think certainly if we keep coming back to something and unpacking it more and explaining it more, it may sort of sway you.
Yes.
Like Cologne is one that I feel like we've played quite a lot and that we understand quite well. And that we sort of like recommend, but we recommended having tested it at like different play accounts and stuff, and we just really enjoy it. So so hopefully we'll get to that space with these other games as well.
Yeah, I think we will. Yeah.
So on the topic of new games,
well, before we do that, I would like to make a proposal to the Council of 18XX Gamers.
I'm already married, Fred, but carry on. Yeah.
No, not that. I would like to coin a new term for 18XX games.
Oh boy. Okay.
Do you know where this is going?
I don't. I was not prepared for this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. It's quite possible that a term for this exists. If it does, I don't know about it. Please send us angry emails to let us know. But
what if I know this term already? Is that going to be awkward?
Well, I said it on Saturday. I came up with it on Saturday.
Wait.
So I think you know it.
I can't remember it. Carry on, but I remember this moment.
Okay. So basically the term is for the way priority deal moves after the stock round. Okay. So there are a number of ways it can happen. The most common so far, it seems to me, is that priority deal is to the left of the last person who acted. So I would like to propose the acronym LOLA.
The LOLA rule.
The LOLA rule, yes, or LOLA, which stands for left of last action.
I love it. As a member of the 18XX Council of Gamers, I endorse this proposal.
If there's an application form I need to complete or something, please email that to us. But yeah, I think that's quite succinct. Like priority deal is LOLA.
Yeah, exactly. It's the LOLA rule. You guys know the LOLA rule.
Yeah.
Okay, I like it.
Okay.
So 1847 has the LOLA rule.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is why it came up.
Exactly. Sure. So 1847 is the game we played on Saturday.
Yes.
So let me try to break it down a little bit about the actual game itself. Kind of an interesting one. It's from Marflow Games, so it's one of Wolfram's games. Same publisher as Cologne and Rhineland, but Wolfram designed Rhineland. He did not design Cologne. But he does publish it.
Okay.
It's kind of an interesting box in that there's sort of like three games in it.
Yes, but this is the anniversary edition.
This is the anniversary edition, which is why it's like a three-game box essentially. So there was originally a game called 1847 False, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And then what happened was over time, Wolfram, this happens a lot with Wolfram's games. He sort of puts them through iterations and versions and he changes things and develops them more and things like that. But then he released this anniversary edition. So this includes his update to the game, his anniversary, which adds quite a lot of stuff. It adds a new corporation, it adds more privates, it changes the map. There's quite a lot of stuff that's different with it. But then he also adds a variant that was developed by a group of German 18XX players. I'm not sure if essentially it's his play group.
Okay.
They've got a particular name. I can't remember. It's like the RRR and BE or something, like the Ron something.
Oh, okay. Right? That's cool.
They've got like a little name for their group, and it's called that variant. And that comes with its own map as well.
Oh, wow.
So it's kind of interesting. So in the box are three different maps, and then some of the cards are double-sided. So it'll say, like, flip it to this side for this variant, flip it to this side for this variant.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go through the variants, it'll tell you what to take out and what to use and stuff like that. So pretty good value. Pretty good value. It's one of the cheaper games on the Marflow side.
Yeah,
so
lots of replayability there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we will not be using variants soon because we got absolutely destroyed by this game.
Yes.
So this is a very brutally cash poor game.
I was so poor. I think this is the closest I've gotten to going broke in a game without actually going broke.
Yeah, and also like bankrupting yourself,
yes,
in a way. You know, yes, what I mean? Like, it wasn't even like getting rusted or
no,
like getting train rushed or getting a company dumped on you. It was literally just like, oh crap, I've mismanaged this.
Yes. Yeah.
And I may actually go broke because of it. So that was quite interesting. But yeah, so essentially it's kind of like a partial cap game, except companies only float at 50%.
Right.
But once they floated, you only get 50% of the income.
Mm.
So in that way, it is basically partial cap, but only floats at 50.
Yeah.
And then after that, but the bank still owns the shares, IPOs, essentially. Yeah. Bank still owns the shares, so that when you buy shares, it goes into the treasury, but the only shares that pay into the treasury are ones that have gone into the bank pool.
Yes.
So we were kind of like, yeah, that's cool. And, you know, we tend to do this with these games. We just unpack it and start playing, right? Mm. We read the rules. We read what's different. We're like, cool. We get this. That's how that works. And then when we started playing, we realized that the trains were insanely expensive. Mm. Insanely expensive. So instead of like 1830 as a base, it's 1835 as a base, I believe.
Okay.
So it has a fixed order in which the companies can come out.
Oh, right.
Which,
yes,
is part of it. So basically there's the first three that have to come out, and then after that the other four is a free for all.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you just have to float the first three in a particular order, which is fine. I think it adds something interesting there.
And the other interesting thing with that is all the corporations had a fixed share price.
Yes.
At the beginning. So they had their IPO price and that was it. You couldn't choose it as a player.
Yeah. You can't set a par value, basically. You have to go with whatever. Yes. And the different companies have different amounts, which is another thing we only really figured out later on. We're like, oh, I'm floating this company late, but it's actually got a really small treasury.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Okay. I can't afford a train and I just floated this. So that was the really bizarre stuff. Like, people would newly float a company and not even be able to afford a train with it.
Mm.
I think that happened to you.
Yes, I think it did.
Yeah, we're like, wait, what? Like, you get 370 into the treasury and the train costs 500.
Yeah, something.
And it
like
wasn't like a super late train. That's the thing. It wasn't like we were on diesels or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that was quite interesting. So I think it's, you sort of have this idea in your mind, right, of like a full cap kind of game, because it almost functions that way with the 50% float. But then you don't get this huge amount of money into your treasury. You get kind of a piddling amount, and then the trains cost a fortune and everything's expensive and, oh, God, I'm totally broke.
Yes. Yeah, that definitely caught me.
Yeah. So there was a few little niggles to it. The private companies were really interesting. So the first company that has to be floated actually gets completely floated after the sale of the privates, because there's multiple privates that have shares of that company.
Right. Yeah.
So that one actually floats before people are even buying shares of corporations.
Mm.
And that company starts really well, has a really good spot.
Yes.
Actually on the board. So that made the private auction, I think that'll make the private auction even more interesting next time, because there's this idea of if you want to take control of that company. A lot of interesting privates, actually. There was one that I had that gives you a fixed income and never closes. And if you connect to a particular tile to the railway network of the board, basically, then its income increases by quite a lot. So it went from like 30 to 50 every round. So that made me quite a lot of money.
Yeah, that's the dual, yes.
There was another one that was quite interesting, which gets a stock token. And every time someone buys a train, it pays them 10% of the price. And then the stock token moves up and you can sell this private company to the bank.
Yeah, that was a very interesting
current one. Share value. And then people can buy this company back from the bank,
yes,
at whatever its current share value is.
Yeah.
So it's basically, if someone buys a train, it like pays dividends, essentially. Mm. So it's only the first train of every OR. So if it pays dividends, it moves up. If no one buys a train, it doesn't pay dividends, it moves down.
Yes.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool and kind of an interesting little niggle.
That was an interesting one. Yes, I had my eye on that one, but I didn't get it. I was third in the first stock order.
Yeah.
So I couldn't get it. But and I think the person who did get it, I think it did pretty well for them as well.
I think so too. I think it would be interesting with that one to, I guess I want to say, like, get a lot of cash quickly with it and then just sell it.
Because
everyone's buying trains early and you can sell it and then float a new company. Mm. Maybe someone else buys it. So yeah, I think there's some interesting stuff to do there. The way he played it, he just kind of kept it all the way until near the end and then sold it, basically.
Yeah, so he basically sold it when I think everyone had a permanent train and it was unlikely that anyone would buy any more trains, which was good timing on his part. I think he played well with that company.
Yeah, no, I think there's something to be said for selling it to get a cash injection, though.
Yes.
But generally, this was a newer player, and generally newer players don't push corporations and floats and stuff very quickly.
Right. Yeah, but he did end second, I think.
He did end second,
and you were first. I was dead last.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, he did well. And he also didn't float anything for quite a while. He was basically playing investor for the first couple of ORs and then got enough cash that way and floated something later in the game. But yeah.
Yeah, so what we really struggled with was trying to figure out how to actually get money into our treasuries.
Yes.
Other than just buying a bunch of shares.
And the main way, I think, is to sell shares to the open market because they pay into the treasury.
Well, the thing is, with a lot of incremental cap games, the company owns the shares.
Mm.
So you can, in the OR, you can issue shares, right? You can sell them to the bank. And that's how, in a lot of incremental cap games, you get a ton of money into the company very quickly.
Right.
Because that's flooding the treasury without you having to spend money to do it.
Yes. But the other thing I think you can do in the stock round as well is, as a player, if I want some money into company X, I buy two or three shares and then I sell them to the market. Because then, let's say I paid whatever it is, 80 for the share. When I sell it to the market, I get 80 back for each share. I sell them all at once, so I get my 80 back for each share. So I haven't spent, like, I'm on net zero, right? So whatever I spent, I've gained back. But now the company has gotten that 80 bucks per share into its treasury. Plus, in the OR, it will get the dividends from those shares into its treasury as well. So that's something I figured out way too late in our play of that game.
Yeah, no, I think we were discussing that as well, that maybe the strategy is to fill up your bank pool early on.
Hmm.
But it's very interesting, and I think it's something that we definitely need to revisit because we all really struggled. I mean, I can't help but feel like our trains were really slow.
Mm, I think they were, yeah.
We pushed trains incredibly slowly because we were all broke.
Yes.
And we all just started doing like mass withholding. Our stock tokens had a little meeting at the bottom left corner of the board, yeah. You know, and it was almost like a disaster. I think it's one of these games, though, that there's a lot of stuff you have to be paying attention to. Mm. So you have to pay attention to which companies float better early, which ones potentially float better later, how much money you're getting into the treasury, where the trains are at. It's not just like, I'll float a new company and buy some trains and worry about buying a new one later.
Which is how I almost went broke.
Yeah.
I floated the second company quite early on and had no money and then had to buy a train for it.
Exactly. You know, there was actually a decision to be made there of like, oh, is it actually bad for me to float this company? Or yeah. So it almost felt like, I think what happened to you, the problem that has happened to you is that you floated that company and had no cash left to kind of emergency buy.
Yeah.
So then you had to start selling the shares that you just bought. And it kind of crippled your finances quite a lot. Yeah. So it was pretty tough. Yeah, I think everyone enjoyed it, though. It was an enjoyable game. It wasn't like kind of miserable. Well, I don't know. Maybe you didn't enjoy it after that.
I still enjoyed it. I think I made a fairly decent comeback from where I was, even though I ended up lost still. I think from being almost broke, the companies that I did have ended up running some really good routes. I think one of them was up there in the higher end of the payouts. So yeah, I think I learned some stuff from that play for sure. But yeah, I learned a little bit too late.
Yeah, that's the thing. We kind of got to a very satisfying end game. We were running big routes and getting big incomes, and our stock prices were finally going up. But at the end of the game, our stock prices were super low, which I think is evidence of some clear mismanagement from all of us.
Yeah,
you know, because it shouldn't really be that way. I mean, they were way at the bottom still. They just started creeping out before we ran out the bank. So. Yeah, I think that what's interesting about it is that we managed to get there, but we went at a crawl.
Yes.
And I think that if we played that better, I'm positive that there's ways of managing that money a lot.
Oh, I'm sure.
A lot better, so that you can actually have a stock that's worth a lot of money.
Yes.
You can afford trains, and you can push the trains a lot faster.
Mm.
Which makes me think it might be quite a quick game.
If you manage to push the trains, yes.
Yeah, because we struggled with that.
We struggled, yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it is a slightly slower train game. It's certainly a possibility. Mm. Quite a lot of different trains. So there were some trains that added towns, so the N plus N trains, basically. And there were some that would just hit a certain number of stops.
Yes, and there were also very few trains of some types. Like there was one where there was only one of it, and I think there was another type where there was only two of that one or something.
Yeah, yeah, they were quite limited, a lot of them.
Yes.
But it made for some interesting stuff because you had to kind of plan your routes accordingly. For me, the map felt very well thought out.
Mm.
You know, there's like a coal bonus if you get to this section or whatever. And I realized looking at the routes and stuff, there were certain trains that would hit it exactly.
Right.
Like if you have this train, you can exactly hit that bonus almost, and you have multiple options for that route and exactly hit that bonus. You could see how certain blocking mechanisms had kind of been put in place. Mm. I don't know, the map, the more I played in it, the more it felt very cleverly constructed to me.
Right.
There were a lot of routes that sort of like, oh, if this person takes this route down here, it's actually no way to get there. And there was a lot of stuff going on there that felt very interesting. So I think it's got quite an interesting map game to it.
Yes.
And there's definitely an east to west, north to south kind of thing going on.
Right.
There's a few off-board bonuses. But those routes, you have to carefully protect them as well.
Right, yeah.
And I could definitely see that. So the coal route is the big one because it adds an extra 70 if you go from a coal mine to one of these two off-board routes. And I think that one is potentially hotly contested. And you kind of have to go sort of one side of the board to the other.
Mm.
But there's a lot of potential for blocking and stuff on the way. The tiles were quite interesting, the way they upgraded. There were a lot of tiles that could not legally upgrade past green.
Oh, right.
And in addition to that, there were green tiles that only had a single city.
Yes.
So there's potential, a single station, right? Mm-hmm. So there was definite potential there to plonk one of those down and token everyone else out.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff like that going on that's pretty mean.
Yes.
That I think that the more you become aware of that stuff by playing it more, the more you'll start to do that kind of stuff.
Yes, I'm sure, yeah.
So there's always a lot of things in these games, you know. I think oftentimes I look at these games and I'm like, yeah, the bank is this much. There's these tiles, you know. And I kind of just see yellow, green, brown.
Yeah.
You know, but when you actually play it, you're like, ooh. There's so much thought that goes into the tile setup.
Mm. Yeah, and I don't feel like I know the tiles well enough to be able to know, oh, I wonder if this tile is in this game kind of thing, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Not at all. Yeah. Not at all. It's really, really tough in that way. And only when you play it, you realize, ooh, this is a spot that can't be upgraded, or this is a spot that can get screwed over quite easily.
Right,
or,
yeah.
You know, there's an opportunity to token someone out with this tile and whatever. You know, so these games really just reward multiple plays. That's really what it comes down to. You know, you learn so much in your first game.
Mm.
And so it'd be fun to go back to our second game and be like, okay, cool, let's sell off everything I have into the open market straight away and let's see how this works.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's a need to sort of fiddle with it, right?
You need to experiment a bit.
And see if it's disastrous or if it works.
Yeah. Yeah, let's just chalk my play up to experimentation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but you're winning too many of them now, Chris.
On a roll, man.
This has me worried.
On a roll. Did I win the 46? I did, eh?
Yes, I think you did. Yes. Yeah.
So I'm going for the hat trick on Thursday.
Mm. Nice. So Thursday we're planning to play 89.
Yes. Yeah, we've been really wanting to go back to a sort of a distilled full cap game.
Yes.
without the bells and whistles and stuff. I think there's stuff that we want to try. You know, last week we spoke about the capital control strategies and things like that.
Right.
And the capital destruction strategy. So yeah, I really want to start to sort of put some of these things into practice to see how they work. There's a lot that I've learned about how the basic full cap kind of game works. I'm trying to play around with it in our online game as well. I'm definitely experimenting there. Yeah, and seeing how that kind of goes. So,
yes.
But it's kind of fun to make mistakes.
It can be, yeah.
Yeah.
As long as you learn from them.
Yeah, I just hope anyone playing with us online is not going to be horrified when we like kind of suck and they're like, why am I listening to you guys talk about?
Oh, wow. We
it ruined our reputation.
The truth comes out.
Yeah. We just listener count just drops off immediately. It's like, you did what? I'm like, yep. What's up, yeah. Basak? Thank goodness we haven't pretended from the start to actually know what we're talking about.
That's true.
Yeah, yes. We haven't pretended to be like really good experts. And people just like crush us in like the second ever 1830 game. And they're like, guys.
Yeah.
But I must say, playing that game, I'm starting to see the magic of 1830 a little bit.
Yeah, I'm enjoying that play a lot. It's very interesting.
And I'm starting to see how all these games are... Because, you know, I was saying a few weeks ago, I was saying, you know, when I compare 89 and 30, like, I don't immediately know, like, what the difference is. Like, they're both full cap. This one's a bit smaller. But, yeah, what makes 1830 1830, you know? But in this game, and we're not very far into it at all, I'm like, ooh, okay. I can kind of see the magic here.
Yes.
Like, that private auction was very interesting. And the map is, I'm looking at the map. I'm like, this is quite interesting. This is quite tough. And, you know, I don't know. It's kind of like, okay, I see. I'm seeing more. I don't see completely, but I'm seeing more what kind of makes it special.
Right, yeah.
You know, or what makes these individual games kind of unique and special. So.
Yeah, but I really think, like, if you know one style of game very well, it'll also help you to spot those differences in other games.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And so, because for me, it's all still a bit vague, like, what the actual implications are of certain rule changes or... capitalization or trains or, you know, things like that. So yeah, I'm really keen to get to know one type a bit better and then take it from there.
Yeah, no, me too. Yeah. Me too. So what was your overall kind of impression of 47?
It was good. I enjoyed it. I think it was, yeah, it was interesting and it had some interesting things to it. Like even the privates had to sell in a certain order, did they? Is that right?
Oh, no, the privates didn't have to be sold in a certain order.
No, but you could. Some of them were like packages where if you buy this private, you got
a share
with it and things like that. Yeah. That's right, yeah. Yeah, so that was interesting. I think like that train one was certainly in demand, so it was gone by the time it got to me. Yeah, there are definitely... So like something that I can see from that is how you can't really go into an 18XX ever and say, this game, I'm going to try this. It all depends on where you draw in the turn order and which privates go. And that will determine your strategy, I think, especially if you're very good at it. Like, I think your private will, to a large degree, determine your strategy, especially if it's just if it's a private that's a little bit more complex than just giving you income, which most of them are, I think, in the better 18XXs. So I think that to a large extent will determine your strategy for the game. And I'm not quite where, you know, I adjust well to that, I don't think. This game was interesting. I'll play it again, but I think I will try to wait a while before I play it again and just play some full cap games, kind of get the hang of those, and then try a partial cap game again.
Yeah, we're going to have to figure out what the other game is that that we're going to sort of bounce between as well.
Cologne is full cap, isn't it?
Yeah.
And 1830 we've got in the group as well.
Yeah, I think it's just a bit long potentially.
Yeah, but maybe for a weekend we can every now and then schedule definitely. An 1830.
I really want to try 49 again as well.
Which one is 49 again?
That's the one with the six companies that came out in a specific order and the order's randomized.
Oh, the randomized.
That's your disastrous one.
Yes.
That's the one where you're really miserable.
Yes.
That was Misery Trains.
Yes.
I think we need a redemption arc for that story.
Yeah.
Okay, so where are you slotting 47 in?
It's not making the top five for now.
Okay.
Yeah, and you?
I think that... Okay, so let me talk about what I liked.
Okay.
I really like the privates.
Yes, they are interesting.
I love a game with interesting privates. And I think the private auction and stuff was very interesting and cool.
Yes.
Like, I liked how that stuff worked. I enjoyed the companies floating in a specific order thing because I'm curious to see how that kind of plays out. I like the different prices for companies, because for me it's less freedom in that you can't just part it whatever you want, but I think it's interesting in that it gives you another decision point.
It does give you a decision. So the main decisions I see with that is like how much money do you need in the company because of where the trains are.
Yeah.
So a company that's set at a higher share price will obviously get more capital in. But I'm also pretty sure, although I'm not good enough to for this to apply to me, I think, but I'm also pretty sure those share prices are scaled with their location on the map as well. Like some of the lower priced ones, I'm suspecting, I didn't pay attention to it in our play, because I didn't think about it then. But I think some of the lower share prices one might be easier to start off with a route straight away.
Or have more powerful positions, potentially.
Yeah, or have more powerful positions, like being able to block some other people or something.
That's
maybe
interesting, because I had that orange company, and I believe it had a pretty low starting price.
Mm.
It didn't necessarily have a great route to start, but it did have a powerful position. So right. It sat right in the center of that coal line.
Yeah. Didn't basically. It also have fewer stations, though?
Yeah, it didn't have a lot of stations.
So that also balances that, I think. So yeah. You're in a position where you can block everyone, but you don't have the stations to block everyone.
Yeah, so I think there's some interesting choices around
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
I think it's about what you're... And also the intersection of your privates as well are going to come into play with that as well.
Yeah.
Because there's private companies that allow you to do specific things in different hexes or allow you to alter terrain in a particular way. And that terrain cost thing is actually a big deal.
Yes.
Like saving yourself $80 on a mountain tile or something in how cash poor that game was, that would actually potentially be quite big. So yeah, I think there's a lot of little interesting niggles there to think about. Mm. So I enjoyed that. The incremental cap stuff, I don't know. I think that it's interesting how cash poor it is. Generally, I like games that challenge you like that. But I just don't feel like I have it figured out yet. So I guess I'm pretty neutral on that because I have to see how it plays out next time. But I'm kind of excited to try it.
Yeah.
I also really like the map. I like the map and the tiles, and I think there's interesting stuff happening there. It was one of the more interesting map games that I feel like I've played.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It felt very tense for me. There were a lot of times people could have blocked me or like, and I think they didn't realize, like there was a time where Simon didn't elect to take his free tile lay action. And if he had done the one that I thought he was going to do, I was looking at that tile upgrade chart and I was like, oh, there's nothing that this upgrades to that can actually get me there. I have to go all the way around. And that was to complete my coal run. So it would have been hugely costly to me. It would have taken me two or three extra turns to get there. And this was towards the end of the game.
Mm.
And he didn't do it. And I was like, yes, just finish your turn. Finish your turn. Thank you. Yeah, because he had his own really exciting stuff going on. So I think he wasn't really bothered about it. He didn't need it. But yeah, it's the kind of thing that... He wouldn't necessarily have had any reason to believe that upgrading that tile wouldn't have got me there because we were sitting right next to each other. The tiles were sitting right next to each other, but it turns out there wasn't a green tile that could have done that for me, which is quite interesting. So there's a lot that I liked. Nothing that really stood out to me that I really didn't like.
Okay.
Yeah, so overall, I really liked it. I really enjoyed it a lot, and I would definitely be keen to try it again. I agree with you, though. I think it's one we can kind of come back to.
Yes.
The last thing about these games is people have been playing the same ones for 20 years. Mm. They don't go out of style. They don't go out of fashion. I mean, we can bust that out in 2 years' time and it'll be fine. You know. Yes. So I just like sort of building this variety. I like building the collection.
You're collecting them now.
Yeah, I'm kind of collecting them now, yeah. In terms of the list, I think I'm going to slot it in at number 5.
Are you? Okay.
So 46 just by default gets shunted to the bottom.
Mm.
And I think I enjoyed this first play more than I enjoyed my first play of 49.
Okay.
So for that reason, I'm just going to put it ahead of 49 for now. That being said, I feel like 49 is probably going to claw its way back. It seems to be very well liked.
Right. Okay.
And I think it has a lot of potential to be really good. That's why I want to kind of go back to it.
Mm.
I want to have another stab at it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I have a feeling 49 will reclaim that spot in relatively short order, but for now, I'm putting it at number 5.
Okay. Well, yeah. Good. Interesting.
Are you ready for our South African topic?
Oh, cool. Have we got a South African topic?
We do have a South African topic, kind of. So, okay. This was something we were talking about today, and I said that I was talking to you. I said I was just thinking about it because actually in Per's email, he was talking about board game conventions or 18XX conventions.
Right, yes.
And he was talking about the ones they have in Sweden and some that he's been to. It was a really nice email because he was talking about some of the plays he's had and things like that. But he asked, what's the board game community like in South Africa? So okay. I was like, yeah, I guess that's relevant. So the board game community, I want to say, is fairly small. But
I don't know. I think it's difficult to say when you're in it.
Yeah.
Like, because so we've got a pretty big event happening every month that's organized by one of the kind of like online board game stores that's also now got a shop, I think. Right. And they organize a board game day once a month. Well, and now it's a whole weekend a month. So it's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And I haven't been in a while myself, but the turnout, I believe, is very, very good. So I think if you're in the middle of that, it's pretty big. Like, the board game community is pretty big. But a lot of my friends, or some of my friends, don't even know about it. Or, you know, random people I speak to don't even know that anything exists beyond Monopoly, Scrabble, and
Well, that's Trivial the thing, Pursuit, right? I mean, we live in the biggest city in the country, right? Joburg is the biggest,
it's
right?
One of them, I'm sure, yeah.
Well, I think it's the most populated, if not the biggest geographically. But I'm pretty sure geographically it's the biggest as well. So we have a pretty decent board game community here.
Right.
It's pretty passionate. Like you say, there's a board game thing. But if you think about it, there's not a lot of different board game things. There's not a lot of different board game venues. There's a lot of Magic the Gathering, relatively. A reasonably big amount of Magic and stuff like that goes on. But generally, it kind of struggles. You know, like Keyforge is a Magic-like kind of card game that came out, and they've been really struggling to get any kind of a competitive community together.
Okay.
You know, whereas elsewhere, I know in the States and stuff like that, they have big tournaments and stuff happening all the time. It's done reasonably well, you know? So anything that isn't like pretty much super mainstream, I find kind of generally struggles to thrive. Okay. So Johannesburg can do board games, but it has one sort of big board game location. And keeping in mind, we've had these kind of expos, like hobby expos and comic expos and stuff like that. And the guy who runs the big board game venue, he stopped doing the store. He used to exhibit at those events, right? So he'd have a stand. He stopped doing his stand because it wasn't making enough money to warrant the rental price.
Right, yeah.
You know, and that's at like specifically hobby stuff, you know, which shows that the community is still pretty small.
Yeah.
Like, people are making money. They're selling like anime figurines and stuff, but he's not making enough money selling board games.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think that it's pretty small. It's pretty passionate though, but I think it depends where you are. Us in Joburg, we kind of spoiled.
Yeah.
There's that gaming thing that happens, you know. They basically have a big event once a month, but every weekend you can go there. He's now managed to. So that guy, his name's Richard, has managed to grow enough to sort of open up his own space with tables and a game library, and you can come there and play games and all that kind of stuff. So there was enough growth there for him to do that, to transition from an online-only store to a brick-and-mortar store. So that's pretty successful.
Yes.
That's doing pretty well. But it's almost like largely concentrated on him when it comes to dedicated board game stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of the focus is largely him, really, in terms of like venues and stuff like that. We don't have those all over the place. And I think in other cities, it's also a bit tricky as well. There's one or two in other places, but for example, my city where I grew up, Port Elizabeth, it's a pretty big city. But there was a guy in our group the other day looking for people to play with in Port Elizabeth, and he couldn't find anyone.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, and there's a store there that plays Magic, and they have a pretty decent Magic community, but those guys aren't interested in playing board games. So then when we get into 18XX games, which is a tiny niche within the niche of board gamers, in South Africa,
not many that I know of.
Not many that I know of. I own what now? Like 7 18XX games?
Yeah.
I'm probably in like the top 10 of people in South Africa who own, like, you know what I mean? Like,
you might have the biggest collection in South Africa.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. I'm probably in the top 10 for like biggest collection. There's probably one dude here somewhere who's got like 50.
Yes, that
I don't
we
know.
Just haven't.
Who just come plays across, with his buddies and like we never hear about him or whatever, you know. But I imagine that there's one or two people like that, but then probably beyond that, a couple of people who own 46.
Yes, yeah.
That being said, the interest has been rising.
I think so, yeah.
You know, I'm in a couple of these WhatsApp groups and I talk up 18xx all the time, and there's been a lot of interest. People are starting to do their own print and plays and stuff, you know, and I've been kind of helping them with that. So yeah, I think that that is part of the global rise though. For me, there's a global increased interest in 18xx.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's difficult to really say that because it's like when you become aware of it, you know,
right.
You see more of it. So I don't know. I think it's very difficult to gauge.
That is true. But in kind of being active in the communities and stuff, I can see people talking about it that, you know, 18xx Kickstarters, for example, that have won every few years or something. Now there's been like 4 crowdfunded Kickstarter 18xx games in 1 year.
Yes.
Couple of P500s on GMT sites going up, a new company that's launching a bunch of Kickstarter games next year. So there definitely does seem to be quite a big uptick in the last year or so of people interested in 18xx.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope that's the case.
Yeah. So I think South Africa's sort of been swept up in that as well because these board gamers are like, ooh, is this a new hotness that I'm
not particularly aware of?
Yeah. When was 1830? Like 1978 or something? Yeah.
So was it?
I think
that's
so.
That's pretty much 40 years old.
Yeah. So pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah, true. Hey?
Yeah.
Sure, that's scary.
Yeah, but we, I mean, we were kind of talking about it as well as maybe trying to have like an 18xx get together at one of these events or something and see how it goes, see how many people are interested. We might have to sit there all day and just teach people how to play kind of thing. We can give it a try, see what the interest is, and maybe one day have our dedicated 18xx day or something.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we were talking about basically having a convention, but acknowledging that the first convention might have 10 people, including us.
10 would be nice. Yeah.
Yeah, no, 10 would actually be a pretty good turnout. Yeah, we could play 2 games at once. Yeah, so we kind of thought about it because we could actually use that space. We could chat to Richard about using some of his space or whatever, having a couple of dedicated tables for it. So yeah, but start small and see what happens. I mean, I think any efforts to grow this community is great.
Yeah.
You know, it can only be better for everyone when 18xx games are more accessible, more widely known, more people to play with.
Yes.
Yeah. So in terms of the South African community, though, tiny. Tiny to the point of being non-existent when it comes to 18xx.
Yes.
You know, I think there's other places in the world like Germany, Sweden, Poland, places like that. They've got some pretty decent 18xx communities, like Train Gamers, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they have conventions, they have 18xx conventions. I don't actually know what the turnout at those is, but I imagine, I want to say like less than 100 people, but more than 40 people, something like that.
Yeah, I have no idea, but that seems like a reasonable guess.
I feel like somewhere in like sort of the 2-digit range, potentially. I could be totally wrong about that, but that's kind of the impression I've got just from the little bit that I've seen, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Which is pretty awesome. But I mean, you have people coming from quite far to go to some of these things.
Yes.
I don't think anyone's ever going to travel for a South African one. We are literally in the center of nowhere.
Yeah.
Essentially, when it comes to this kind of stuff,
we're at the bottom.
Yeah. We're great for a trade route 300 years ago, but that it turns out not such hot stuff anymore. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, but we, to answer your question, I suppose it's that it's relatively small, but we would like to try and grow it.
Yeah. And I think board gaming in general is growing in South Africa still.
Definitely. Board games definitely on the uptick as well, as I think it is globally. We talk about being in the golden era of board games.
Yeah.
A lot of people say that, you know, and I think that that's true.
Mm.
Yeah. But in general, when it comes to this sort of like hobby stuff, there's little communities that try and kind of keep it alive. And we could potentially be the ones to do the same thing for 18xx. So,
yeah,
which would be quite exciting.
I think we should give it a try.
What would we call a derailed con? Do you have like a fun pun for that one?
A derailed con? I don't know. I want to do something with con and conductor.
Yeah. It's true. We'll workshop it.
We'll think of something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, anything else that you'd like to add?
No, that's it.
That's it, guys. Yeah, thank you so much for listening. We always appreciate it. We love emails, Twitter feedback, anything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Derailed18xx on Instagram and Twitter.
Yeah, and derailed18xx@gmail.com as well.
Yes.
Yeah, Gmail touch. Very professional.
Yeah.
We're the real deal, yeah. Yeah, well, thanks very much, guys.
Cool, thank you.
Cheers.
Bye.